Kings, the book of Kings. We've gotten through now into the second book. And last week, we looked at the story of Naaman, the Syrian warrior that was stricken by leprosy, and how he was miraculously healed by Elijah. And we saw much faith being displayed. The little servant girl that recommended that Naaman go see Elijah to be healed. Again, there had not been much evidence of healing of leprosy, but God honored her faith, and Naaman was healed. And then we saw what happened to Gehazi through his greed. The king of Syria had sent a tribute along for the king of Israel and for Elijah. Elijah, of course, rejected it. The Lord's grace cannot be purchased, but Gehazi was more than he could do to refuse the money that was there, and he came up with a scheme and a lie to appropriate some of that money for himself. And in the end, he ended up with leprosy. The leprosy that Naaman was healed of ended up coming on to Gehazi. So that is a real quick update of what we looked at last week. Last week's passage was really crystal clear. I don't think there were many things in there that were hard to grasp. This week's study is a little bit different. At least for me, I found it a little bit more difficult to to understand the passage. Fortunately, there are helps available, and I'll tell you, Bill McDonald's probably my first place to go to. And in most of these things, he always gives you kind of the overview you need. And then if you need further study, of course, there are other helps available. But I find McDonald's commentary to be invaluable in helping in a case like this passage. But anyhow, with that as background, turn to 2 Kings chapter 6. 2 Kings chapter 6, and we'll begin reading in verse 8. Now the king of Syria was making war against Israel, and he took counsel with his servants, saying, "My camp will be in such and such a place." And what was happening there is the Syrians were conducting these various raids onto Israel. So they wouldn't always hit at the same place. They wouldn't always come across at the same place. So they would camp at various places and, assemble the army before they struck in various places. So that's my camp will be in such and such a place. Verse 9, and the man of God, that would be Elijah, sent to the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that you do not pass this place, for the Syrians are coming down there." So Elijah, through God's revelation, was keeping tabs on what the Syrian army was about to do, where they were gathering, and he was passing this information on to the king of Israel, so that they would be prepared for the attack from the Syrians. Verse 10, then the king of Israel sent someone to the place of which the man of God had told him. Thus he warned him, and he was watchful there, not just once or twice. So this happened at least three times, not just once or twice. So Elijah was becoming a pretty good source for the king of Israel to know when these attacks or where these attacks were going to take place, and he could do something to thwart them. Now, the king of Syria has kind of a different perspective on this thing. Verse 11, therefore the heart of the king of Syria was greatly troubled by this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, "Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" So the king of Syria, he's getting frustrated. You know, every time he has a plan to go in and attack Israel, they seem to know about it. So he thinks that there's a spy someplace in his army, in the organization, leaking this information to Israel. And he said the last phrase there, "Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" So again, he thinks there's a spy in his midst passing this information. Verse 12, "And one of his servants said, 'None, my lord, O king, but Elisha, the prophet who is in Israel, tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedroom.'" Now, it's interesting that somehow this servant knows this. We aren't given a clue how the servant knows this, but again, it's exactly what the situation is. So anything that's going on that the Syrian does in secret discussion with his men, that Elisha knows what is going on and passes the word on to the king of Israel. So the Assyrian king, this is his plan, verse 13, "So he said, 'Go and see where he is, that I may send and get him.' And it was told him, 'Surely he is in Dothan.' Therefore he sent horses and chariots and a great army there, and they came by night and surrounded the city." So, of course, his intention was to find Elisha, take him out of the picture so that he wouldn't be able to thwart these raids that he was doing on the Israel. And he had been told that Elisha was in the city of Dothan. So by night, his army assembled around the city of Dothan and surrounded the city at night. So the next morning, verse 15, "And when the servant of the man of God arose early and went out, there was an army surrounding the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?'" So notice this is no longer Gehazi. This is some unnamed servant that is working there with Elisha. He goes out and sees this army assembled around the city with great concern, which I think anybody would have that concern. He doesn't know what they're going to do. So Elisha answers him in verse 16. "So he answered, 'Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them.'" So he reassures him that God is on his side, and there's more on his side than there are on the enemy's side. And it's interesting, if you flip back to Romans chapter 8, Paul makes a similar statement in Romans chapter 8, verse 31. "What then shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us?" So kind of the same principle. Even though it looks like you're outnumbered, even though it looks like it's bad for you or for your cause, whatever, if you're on the Lord's side, God is for us, who can be against us? So it's a it's an encouragement I think that Christians need from time to time. Often feel like we're the only one out there sometimes, you know, in wherever it may be, in the workplace or something like that, and it seems like the forces are against us. But again, if God is for us, then who can be against us? And that was the point that Elisha was making with his servant. Now, to demonstrate to the servant how true the statement is, verse 17, "And Elisha prayed and said, 'Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see.'" So he's praying that some miraculous thing might happen, that the servant would see and be encouraged. "Then the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha." So here's I don't know what you would describe the scene there. It's kind of a supernatural kind of thing that that the servant's eyes are open and he sees this great army of God that has surrounded Elisha at his protection. You know, as we said, is the same thing active in our lives. There's, you know, an army of God around us. Even if our eyes are not able to see that, you know, we're under the protection of God and his angels all the time. So at this point I'll stop and see if any brother has a comment or point about what we've looked at so far. Again, the Lord miraculously is providing for Elisha, but also we should have confidence that the Lord is providing for each of us as difficulties arise. All right, well, we'll continue on. Now, so this is the scene that you see from Elisha's viewpoint. Now, verse 18. So when the Syrians came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, "Strike these people, I pray, with blindness." And he struck them with blindness according to the word of Elisha. So we have this large army assembled against them. Elisha prays that blindness will strike the Syrian army, which does happen. Now Elisha, in verse 19, now Elisha said to them, "This is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man whom you seek." So he said, okay, you kind of see the picture here. The Syrian army has been blinded. Elisha goes to him and says, you know, "This is not the place you want to be, and I'll take you to the man." Well, the man who was doing the talking was the man that they were actually after. But what does Elisha do? In verse, at the end of the verse there, but he led them to Samaria, which is where the Israelites were gathered in Samaria. Verse 20, so it was when they had come to Samaria that Elisha said, "Lord, open the eyes of these men that they may see." And the Lord opened their eyes and they saw. And there they were inside Samaria. So you kind of have to think what the Syrian army thinks at this time, at this point. Not a good situation. They've been blinded. They've been led into the heart of the Israeli army, and things are not looking particularly good for them. Verse 21. Now, when the king of Israel saw them, he said to Elisha, "My father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?" You almost can sense the excitement that the king of Israel has, or has at that point. He said, "Here's these Syrians that have been just tormenting us, raiding us, you know, killing us, taking our women and children, and we've got them right here in our midst. You know, my father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them?" He asked him twice. Answers the question, and he answered, "Shall I kill them? Would you kill those whom you have taken captive with your sword and your bow?" So he kind of answers a question. You know, if this army under normal circumstances captured them with the sword or the bow, you know, would you kill the captives? Would you kill the, you know, those that you have captured? And the answer is no. You know, even back then, that was not the way that warfare was fought. That the captives were not killed. But Elisha also tells him, "Set food and water before them, that they may eat and drink and go to their master." So that's probably certainly is a very unusual thing that you would see an instruction. That not only were they not harmed, food and water was set before them that they may eat and drink and go to their master. So in verse 23, then he prepared a great feast for them, and after they ate and drank, he sent them away, and they went to their master. So the bands of Syrian raiders came no more into the land of Israel. So by this act here, the Syrian captives are fed, they're treated well, and they're set free. And when they go back to their master, then his the action that's taken there. So the bands of Syrian raiders came no more into the land of Israel. So, and I guess you could look at this from two points of view. Why did the Syrian armies not come in, come back to attack the Israel? Was it because of this great kindness that they were showing? I think the world, if they would look at this, that would be the message that they would want you to take out of this, is, hey, you show kindness to these people, and look what happens. They become your friends, and there's some of that twisted thinking going on in our politics these days, I think, where we think, or some think that through these acts of kindness or whatever they are, that these people that have been our sworn enemies will suddenly become our friends. So again, I think some people would look at this here and say, oh, that's exactly what happened. Look how well they treated the Syrians. They went home, said, we were really treated well. Let's not mess with the people of Israel anymore. Again, I think that would be a wrong interpretation. And I think the correct interpretation would be that when the Syrians went home, they described the whole situation. Said, here we had Elisha. We had him dead to rights. We had the city surrounded. We were ready to take him. Next thing you know, there we are. We're blind. We can't see a thing. And then this guy, I'm not sure they ever figured out it was Elisha who led them into the midst of the army of Israel. But anyhow, they end up in the midst of the army of Israel. But they're there to tell the story. So the army of Israel treated them well and let them go home. So I think this is the proper interpretation of this, is that the Syrians saw the power of God at work with Elisha and the people of Israel, and said, "Hey, let's not let anything like this happen again. We got out of there this last time with our lives, but maybe we won't be so fortunate the next time." So, any brothers have any comments or observations on this? Do you think that's the right interpretation? Okay, yeah, two clear illustrations here. The grace of God and the salvation that is provided. So thank you for your comments, George. Are there any other thoughts on this, on any of this passage, or on that last part? Okay, that's all that we were scheduled to cover today. Let's see, Craig is not sitting right there, but maybe we'll take a second. Didn't say anything at the break time there, but of course, before the break, but at the break we had the opportunity to...